musky death metal songs.
No one can, Steve.
It's amazing. Slime Life Records is proud to present the classic death metal songs of musky fishing. Jay, do you remember the hit from Elmer Jensen and the Fetus Grinders?
I do.
Here's the classic Minocqua Musky Beheading. Wow, Jay, that's such a great song.
It is. Steve, you know, Elmer actually auditioned for Dark Chaos Frenzy Mayhem, but said no way after finding out that they all like the bass fish.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that's when he joined the supergroup The Sucker Penetrators and recorded the smash hit Death by Bumpboard.
Jay, I think everyone has hard rock wrong, especially deathcore. They think it's all about ooh and not about love. But Freddie Black Metal Blades Palermo proves him wrong with his love song, Pikegasm. It's about one man's love for a few small farm animals and a couple Northwoods girls that are solid twos. They would be ones in a major city.
Gotcha. Hey, Steve, you remember when I was a roadie with Musky Kill Rigs?
Oh, my God, I almost forgot. Who could forget the timeless classic, Smoke 2 and Set the Hook? These songs are amazing, but how could we forget here at Slime Life Records, one of the most influential death metal bands from Stevens Point, Wisconsin, Prop Wash Musky Incinerator.
If no one can forget their smash hit single, Safe Musky Release Into the Boiling Grease.
Jay, this Slime Life promo can never include all the hits of deathcore musky fishing.
I know!
But this compilation includes hits from such artists as Clinch Knot,
Soft Plastic Cadaver,
Backlash Boilermaker,
Hellhound Apocalypse,
Braid Rash,
Musky Corpse,
Jake Smitty Smith and the Minocqua's Boy Choir,
Black Magic Maps,
and Joe Booker and the Bottom Raiders.
Don't forget about fluorocarbon tourniquets.
Jay, people need to stop banging their head and start banging the numbers on your phone, because Elmer's standing by. This is your one chance to get the greatest deathcore songs of musky fishing.
Lighten up your life and live a little, Steve.
Elmer's standing by.
All right, folks, welcome to the podcast chamber.
How's that?
The greatest death metal songs of musky fishing.
I'm buying 2, maybe 3 copies of that thing. It sounds awesome.
The greatest Christmas gift one could receive.
Yeah, I mean, it's got all the, I mean, all the greatest hits from all the greatest bands ever.
We call those bangers.
Yeah, yeah. Fluorocarbon Tourniquet. I mean, who could forget?
There you go. Yeah. Some of the greatest bangers of death metal. Well, if I sound funny, I'm on the road again. On the chode again.
Bing, ding, ding.
Guiding and riding, I call it. So I am a few hours away from home in the hellhole I stay down here. Anyways, if it sounds slightly different, traveling, but we're all over it like fur on a weasel here. Jay, it's one of those deals. The holidays are getting near. We got all this coming on. You know, not a lot of new stuff showing up. We talk about every episode, the comings and the goings, but there's a smattering You got the Rapless stuff in, like we've been talking about. That's been in. Couple new things showing up here shortly we'll talk about. Only thing that's going on right now is a real thing on the Daiwa Lexa, the WNs. Right? Yep. So that's what, $279 down to $199. Pretty good deal on a reel there. Pretty solid reel. Are they making those in the future, or is that the end of those?
That is the discontinued model being replaced by the 23 Lexa.
So, okay.
We don't have a ton left. They're going to go pretty fast.
Gotcha. So, yeah. Hey, if it's a reel you like, what do you know? That's exciting. So exciting stuff.
Yeah, it's a great price.
No,
yeah.
I mean, it's good. And we got it. All that, your catalog, get your catalog again if you're serving a prison sentence.
Got a bunch of clothing in this week. I mean, a lot of clothing, a lot of restocks. So clothing department's looking excellent right now.
Got the hats back in. Oh, Steve Paul hats back in. I'm seeing that. Some of that. So that's the comings and goings. You know, we were talking last week at structure fishing. We're getting down to the nitty gritty on people that are still doing it. Definitely in the South, there's still people out, but it is the few and the far between fishing up north right now, the hardcore stuff. Jake, what are you hearing? Anybody catching fish? I know I talked to Jake Smith. He's been just smashing them up. You know, what's going on?
Yeah, I talked to him too. Yeah, fishing's been pretty good. They're still catching fish on suckers. The water is not cooling down at all at this point. We've actually got some 50s coming for a handful of days this week, and where it might not even freeze at night. So the water's not freezing, you know. The earlier estimate that we were going to have, you know, some ice fishing opportunities for the Thanksgiving stretch is not going to happen now. It's going to be into December. Wahoo!
Good, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good thing. So, you know, even Jim and his brother got out and did some fishing over the weekend. I'm not sure if they're back yet, but I don't know where they went, but who knows? We'll hear some more Monday, but yeah, fishing's been overall pretty good. There's not a lot of people doing it, but it's a lot of soft plastics and a lot of live bait, so they're getting the bait down and slowing the presentation and doing pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, when you get to this point, you know, when you're, it's weird, you know, if you got 50. What do you think the water temps are though? What do you think?
In the 40s.
Yeah, there's not a lot left. You know, big rubber, deep running crankbaits.
Yep.
And live bait, you know, high 40s, you can get away with a little bit more. But if it's mid 40s, low 40s, we're getting into that nitty gritty zone. Really heavy weighted dive and rise baits, you know, that can be good. Like the big, big, big jerk bait presentations. But, you know, deep rubber, deep crankbaits if you're fishing up north. And if you're fishing this late in the year, you're swinging for a big fish. I've always thought that I don't think you can go with too big of a presentation this time of year up there. There's like, you know, maybe you downsize from a pounder to a mag dog.
You know? I agree. Now's the time. Yeah.
Right. There's not a question of, oh, we're not throwing a rattle trap, boys. We're swing for the fences. It's really one of those deals where you can spend the entirety of the day throwing a pounder expecting one contact, right? You know, if you're on big fish water, your big Minnesota water, you know, you're swinging for a serious class fish up north, you know, big baits, you're going to have 10, 15 falls a day. I think the biggest thing is in my mind, for this period of time up there in the cold water, and what I've been successful with is like a really big rubber presentation, but a moderate size sucker. That's the one thing. And I've always, it's kind of irked me about sucker fishing and stuff. If I'm moving them on XL baits, right? Really, really big presentations, and they're not hitting those, but I'm bringing them in and they're confronted with an XL sucker. You know, why should they commit? I still like that moderate size of it. Okay, I'm confident that I'm going to catch one on the cast, but I want to have, quote unquote, instead of a cast back option, I have that live bait option that's not quite as huge hanging out by the side of the boat. You know, just the way I've approached it, you know, some guys will go out there and they're looking for, you know, hey, call in the shop, you have any 39-inch suckers? You know, how many 40 inch suckers do you have? No, not
exaggerated by that much, Steve.
No, guys call and they're like, you got any two footers?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, yeah, that sounds great, but talk about the fish that's going to eat that. I mean, and that's fine. Don't get me wrong. They're out there. It's statistically speaking.
Well, some people probably have some luck with that in the fact that they can reuse the sucker because the thing's too big to kill. You know, they get a smaller fish hanging on or hooked by one hook, and then they land it, and it's like, hey, this thing's it's still alive.
What, half the time they won't hit the thing, Jay. That's the you got a 24-inch sucker. You got a house.
Well,
house
that's awful pet. Yeah,
you know, or 20 the XLs.
Yeah, I'm talking 20s. Yeah.
I mean, I've caught fish on them, don't get me wrong, but my thought process, if you're going out this week and you're going out this week to do it, everybody's looking for the big, big ones. Everybody's soaking those. Are they catching 50 after 50? No. Could you catch a big fish? Of course you could, but I would go moderate, throw big rubber, and fish a moderate-sized sucker. That would be my take, Jay.
Yep. I'm with you on that.
You know, what's moderate? You know, 12s.
Yeah, 12, 13s, 12, somewhere 13s. In there. Sure.
That's not that conservative, really. You know, it's not like I'm telling you, you know, take pike mix out there. I'm saying 10s, 12s, 13s. If they come in on a mag dog, they might commit to that. That's just a thought process. But something that I wanted to cover this week, so many emails, and we talk about it often, that you try to just make an amalgam of what people are asking, right? What's sort of the entirety of what people are asking for? And I think there's a lot of questions about lure selection. Just like we were talking live bait presentations and the combination with rubber is what lure and when, right? Musky fishing could be distilled down to simply where are the muskies, right?
Yeah.
And what lure do I use and when? So the typical what, where, when, or however you want to phrase that. When are they going to be there? Where are they going to be? And what do I use? Right. It really, for me, starts looking like the combination of structure fishing and then intelligent choice in presentation. So last week, structure master fishing class, structure fishing master class 2, right? Electric Boogaloo. We went full tilt on that and discussed that. And I think at a certain point I had enough Pepsis. We got sort of far afield and meander because it all, you can't compartmentalize if it was just an exploration and structure, right, Jay, we would drive around and go, there's one, we've done our job. Right. So structure will denote where the fish are, okay? Like we talked about, structure in combination with seasonality and weather conditions and what's happening at any given moment will dictate where the muskies are. How do we get them? What do we use? That's the question because, like, you know, a bunch of people responded, well, I'm doing this and I'm looking at these areas, you know, things that are supposed to be positive structure. But how do I know how to approach them? What do I use? What do I do? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Thought it makes sense. Logical breakdown. So how do we make intelligent lure selections? Just like we were talking about the big suckers, to me, it makes sense. If I'm throwing a big rubber bait, then I have a moderate-sized sucker and so forth as a sort of combination. But structure will dictate where the muskies are. Therefore, we need to figure out what they're willing to hit. Now, before we get completely down the rabbit hole, obviously, there could be, you know, an argument made for if you get it in front of an actively feeding muskie, they'll hit anything.
Yeah, right, yeah.
I've seen it. I've seen it so many times where I don't think the lure selection mattered as much as proximity. Okay.
I agree. Yeah.
You know, that classic, the bait hit the water, the handle was turning whack.
Mm-hmm.
it didn't have time to make an assessment of what that bait was, what it was emulating or anything. It was a target. So with all things musky fishing, there's always that giant caveat, right? Well, one time my Uncle Jimmy, I don't care what Uncle Jimmy did. I'm talking about days we can't get them to eat and days we're trying to find a pattern. So the overarching premise of lure selection in conjunction with positive structure identification becomes intelligent choices based upon what we're seeing. So that's just kind of the thing. And I'm not saying for like any given day or any given season. We'll cover seasonality in some aspect. But what I'm getting at is I have no clue what is going on, right? That scenario, meaning I need to figure out what muskies are hitting. I understand the structure, so I'm on to what presentations are working, and I have no previous knowledge. You see what I'm saying?
I know exactly what you're saying. You're talking about the majority of the time, not a minority of the time, which is when they're active and they could hit almost anything
right
at that point. So,
yeah, and also, too, I'm framing it as far as like, you know, you've got Friday off. We've got to take everything at our disposal to figure out where the muskie I want to catch is. How do we do that? Well, the reason I brought up structure, and if this is your first episode or your 50th episode and you've not delved into structure fishing or not really wrapped your head around it, do so. Okay? The reason being that is going to dictate where actively feeding fish are. So the first part of the equation is where are the fish? We've done that. We've eliminated that question by positively identifying structure that's going to be productive in conjunction with seasonality and weather.
Check the box.
Check the box. You know, it's not as easy as saying that sentence, but we're going to skip that and move into, in some capacity, what do we use, where, when, and why?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So let's just start at the beginning of the season. What comes to mind, Jay? We'll start with the Northwoods. Now, the Northwoods, or the Northern Habitat Zone, it's not that divergent from what I'm doing down here. It just happens to differ in what time of year that takes place, right? So there's a juxtaposition of timing. We've talked about that previously, but it's something to reiterate. For someone that lives in northern Indiana, it's earlier than it is for you and later for me, and you've just got to go, when is my post-spawn early season, right? Figure that out based on water temps and photo period. But nonetheless, let's go to earliest of the season. What have we always heard the approach is as far as presentations, Jay?
Small baits.
Small baits. Where?
Warmest water you can find.
Which
emerging
is,
weeds, north which, side of the lake, the whole
right,
routine
right.
over and over, sure.
Which is shallow water.
Correct.
Generally. Now, not every north side of the lake is going to be a shallow zone, but nonetheless, the Northwoods trope is when the ice is coming off, the north end warms up faster, weather patterns. But nonetheless, what we're generally targeting as musky anglers in the early part of the season is going to be shallow littoral zones that they might be devoid of weeds at that point. They might have vegetation, whatever, doesn't matter. Shallow water zones, preferably warmer, preferably adjacent to spawning areas, things of that nature, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how do we make an appropriate lure selection? Well, seasonality tells us from experience that fish are going to be on smaller presentations, right? Because they just got done spawning. So an intelligent lure selection would be a smaller presentation. Now, the reason I'm going down this thought process on this aspect is if those fish are shallow, guess what that limits our presentations to? Shallow running presentations, right?
Yep.
Okay. You know, you're going, well, that's obvious, moron. Okay. Gotcha.
Bingo.
But what that limits us to is running depth, right? So what you're going to see is, and I use the early season because it's such a narrow scope of presentations, right? it's small baits that will run shallow, but you know, it's a tiny little glimpse into the thing, which is rattle traps, 500s, 700s, really downsizey topwaters, and pretty buoyant glide baits. That would be about get around it, wouldn't you think? You know, in that early part of the year. I mean, whether it's a, I don't care what the blade.
Yep. But small bucktails, small twitch baits. I love neutrally buoyant stuff or very slow rising stuff like Titan Junior.
There you go.
Love that thing early.
Right. But the lure selection at that time of year is dictated by shallow running, right? And size class. So small and shallow running in general. Shallow doesn't have to, it doesn't mean it goes, you know, less than maybe 5 feet, but that's sort of the parameter. So once we all agree and we understand that this is a narrow field, you can quickly reduce the baits you're looking at that time period. So it's one of those deals of what I'm trying to get at and want to convey is that seasonality, that early part of the year, right, limits you more so than it opens up anything as far as additional presentations. And so there's different parts of the year, whether the late part of the year, we just talked about it, and it may be, I hope I'm making sense. I'm way too sober, but we just talked about the sucker thing, right, Jay?
Yep.
Which is we need to approach really deep water. We said big rubber and maybe really deep running crankbaits and live bait, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Possibly a deep running jerk bait, but that's kind of ancillary. Much like your early season, which is going to be your tiny slammers, your 500s. Not many people do glide or the topwater, but you got glide baits, maybe 3-4 presentations. It's a very narrow band early and late is what I'm getting at, right? So we're relegated to a small group of presentations based upon running depth and preference. So the preference early is warm and shallow. The preference super late is stable and deep. And so those two time frames are highly relegated to just a handful of presentations where that early season part of the year is such a tight, like a small time frame versus entire year, right? What, 3-4 weeks that people are legit really throwing super shallow, right, Jay, for it warms up there and all that?
Yeah, I'd say so. Right.
So, again, where I'm trying to take this whole thing is for a period that happens, it happens every year, but only happens 3-4 weeks out of the year, there's not a lot of options because no one's making them. Ah, where you been going, Ramble Boy? Right? So our lure selection is dictated by those conditions and the chosen location. But we are left in a conundrum because there's not a lot of options. Right? And in the grand scheme of things, for this period of time, in my mind, if there was this late season, yeah, you got bulldogs, you have medusas, you have toothy tufts, you have water wolves, you got tubes. It's all retreads of essentially the same thing, right? A deep running rubber presentation. So, intelligent lure selection might be a matter of branching out from traditional musky things, or it might be a matter of augmentation in that early, early part in the late, late, late part of the year where we're relegated to not a lot of market share of the focus or the market share of what manufacturers have is focused on something that's such a tight seasonality. Whoa, right? Ridiculous. It does me little to no good as a bait maker, a manufacturer, to make a bait that works for something that's happening for just 3 weeks a year. Okay? So that's why you see like rattle traps and you see downsized stuff that's almost bass fishing happen there, and there's not a lot of options during that time frame because, you know, what are you going to make a bait? You see, where I'm going with this, Jay? Is like that time of year, especially that seasonality, your intelligent choice might be something else. Now, I'm to refocus and not get too far afield. How do we make intelligent decisions based on condition, seasonality, and what we're doing. So back to the early part of the year. All right, we're dealing with shallow fish. We're dealing with fish that are recuperating from the spawn, and they want a downsized presentation. How do we tailor our presentation to that? Again, it's shallow. Done. That's all you need to know. I need shallow running baits that run at a number of speeds. So how do I get speed and depth control shallow, right? You said neutrally buoyant baits are baits with a slow rate of rise. That's a way to slow down baits in the early part of the year, right?
Yep.
Baits that have, like the Pugsley. You know, if you need blades or something of that nature, I always thought it was a neat concept where we're putting like that flotation on a blade bait where you can slow that bait down. When it comes to spinner baits, you can use different blade configurations to slow its rate of fall or control where that bait's running. Okay.
Absolutely. So
it's not a given that it's going to be fish are hitting rattle trap. It's we need to tailor those zones in our presentation of those zones. So that early part of the year being a microcosm in the fishery, not a lot of options, intelligent choices will be, you know, upsized bass baits, shallow running baits, 2 to 3 3/4 zone. Now that pretty much, what crank baits can you think of? Cranes, slammers, what baits are sort of knocked off the list, Jay? I mean, obviously not your depth raters, but even some of your quote-unquote shallow running crank baits are wholly ineffective that time of year.
Very effective, yeah. And some of them
I said wholly ineffective. There's a lot of them that are, even, okay, so if I'm fishing 3 feet of water, I'm not fishing a shallow invader, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm not fishing, an H2O cranky nitro. Just because it's a crankbait doesn't mean it's going to apply right there. So what I'm getting at, sorry, I'm trying to steer it in some regard and I'll take it there, which is a crankbait's a crankbait's a crankbait until we understand its running depth, okay? So the next component of this of, let's say this shallow bite, whatever, this post-spawn fiasco, you hear crankbaits work. We need to understand the running depth of crankbait because not all crankbaits are the same. Okay, so what I was getting at, Jay, is like some crankbaits are going to run too deep, making them ineffective. Right? Where
mm-hmm. yeah.
you're going to be relegated for a shallow bite or a shallow section of the year. You're looking for your cranes, your slammers, hence the rattle traps and all this. I'll get off that soapbox and go to the crux of the matter. You ready, Jay?
Yeah, I am ready.
Okay, sorry. The most intelligent way to make the lure selection you need to make is the proximity that it runs to and around cover structure, right? So I said earlier, the premise being we don't know where muskies are, all right? We don't understand where exactly they're at in the water column, but structurally we know where they're at. If we have lures that run tight to cover and structure, or they contour what we're targeting, that's going to allow us to work that cover and structure whole in a completely effective manner and contact fish that are directly using that or in direct contact, right? Make sense?
Yes.
Okay. So that's where I'm going, is once we understand the structures we're fishing from the segment early, we can apply our lures. Now, that means we need to be a student of the running depth of our lures and how they react in the water. Okay. So what I was saying about the crankbaits, there's a differentiate. You can differentiate between your crankbaits from superbly shallow running crankbaits to deep running crankbaits because a crankbait's not a crankbait. The same could be said, Jay, for your rubber baits. Right? Mid, yeah. Shallow, deep, husky, all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Then we get in our glide baits. Are we weighting them? Are you not weighting them? Rate of rise with dive and rise, right? A place that people sort of get far afield and lose the thread is going to be on your bucktails, you know, but the bucktail running depth can be dictated by the size of the blade, creates more lift. The smaller blades, whether it be your French or your Indiana, have less lift than in the surface area of a Colorado. So go to listen to the blade masterclass, but we'll sort of break that one down. But the surface area of the blade dictates how much lift it has and how high it runs. So for me, when I was saying when we first started going, which was like, how do we how do we know what to throw? What's an intelligent choice to throw? What's a smart lure selection? At any given moment is going to be what lure is going to be most effective in around the cover and structure I've selected a fish, or not selected a fish, but I've been told by seasonality to be there. Okay, so seasonality, structure will tell you where to be there. Running depth is your first and foremost. So the whole rambling crap I'm going at is you're relegated to what kind of baits you can throw based upon the structure that the fish are on. And then we need to understand the contouring nature of these baits, right? So you got mid, shallow, and deep with your crankbaits. Okay? So it does us no good to sort of go, hey, muskies are on points and it's X, Y, and Z part of the year. And we're pretty confident they're on a point and they're using points. Why would we not use a lure that will contour that point? See what I'm saying?
Yep.
To have that. So, again, you people want me to go down the rabbit hole on this stuff. Here I go. My point being this. You know, if you don't like me drunk, you won't like me sober like I am right now. My point being this. On points. We have a point that goes from 0 to 12.
Okay.
We have not appropriately fished that point until we've used a bait that contours that point from 0 to 12. Because how far will muskies move that are negative and neutral? We're not talking about the best days on earth. We're talking about days we don't know where the fish are. What are we going to do? We have to contour that. So if we have different structural elements and different elements of cover that we need to contour with presentations, right? We better have a really good understanding of what, Jay? The running depth of our lures. Now, how? Help me out here. Sort of break down some of the variations or how wildly these can deviate. So people, you know, to me, it's just like, when I'm trying to help pound through people's head is this. It's like, just because you have a crankbait doesn't mean it's effective in every scenario. It might be only effective in one scenario, right? So you look at, say, like Tom LeBeau stuff. He has, what, three options on a lot of his crankbaits, mid, shallow, and deep? And, like, the shallow version might run what, Jay?
Yeah, more or less. Some of his shallow, he's talking about big fork lures, right. Of course. And, you know, the shallow stuff, like the twitch starter, 6-inch twitch starter, right. 8-inch twitch starter, barely a foot.
Right.
Great side-to-side kick, too. But that is a truly shallow crankbait. Okay. It's shallower than a crane bait.
Yeah.
Shallower than a slammer,
right? And but if you throw a twitch darter at a deep point in high bright sun, dead flat, calm conditions, I probably wouldn't expect a positive result, right?
There again, you want to contour for the depth you're working. If you're talking about working you're on the deep point of a 0 to 12 point, mm-hmm. and you're working from shallow to deep, so you want something actually that's going to cover as much depth contour down as possible. Mm-hmm. So in that case, something running just below the surface, you're not fishing a bay exactly. with emergent weeds and blah, blah, blah. In right. that case,
it's misapplication.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right. So I fish.
It would be.
So the baseline being for me is a presentation can't be denoted as spot on for a location we're targeting if it doesn't directly contour the structure or cover present. Right? So don't go to a point and throw a crankbait that runs far above the cover or structure and consider it to be fished effectively. Right? That's the whole premise of I'm not going to target these areas with presentations that don't run tight to that cover and structure, because unless muskies are active and above cover and structure, I'm not going to contact them. Okay? Long-winded to use the right bait for the right spot. People are asking in-depth questions on lure selection, so that is simplistically, it's not simple, but it's complex, but it's simple, right? You can't fish Let's say, you know, on any given day, we have like seven spots we're going to hit that are structural spots, right, Jay, or areas.
Okay.
That might require that you use multiple lures to properly contour those.
I agree.
Right? So it might be a matter of we approach the shallow section with maybe a big fork at the very top, and then we work our way down and we work our way down. Now, that just forces us yet again to have a really strong understanding of the running depth of our lures. Right? And it's not what's on the package either. If the package says this is running, it runs 6 to 7. Well, do you have one that runs deeper? Do you have one that is shallow? Or right? So I'm not going to get in the rabbit hole of breaking down every single bait you own.
Yeah, the packages aren't always accurate.
Right, but it's worth considering.
Gets you in the ballpark.
Right? If you go, hey, I've got a really good depth rater, and this one runs 8 feet, mm-hmm. you know, your other ones might run 6, you know, and what I'm getting at is when proximity matters, it's everything. So I don't consider a location, a spot, if you will. I hate the word spot, but for argument's sake, we'll just go with it. I don't consider a location to be fished out appropriately unless I've contoured the cover and structure, right? So just for whatever that's worth.
Yeah.
So my lure selection is not about anything other than that. Now, that could be said as well, and I'm not trying to belabor it, but look back to the points, because points are a great structural element everybody understands, right? We now have that same 0 to 12 point, Jay. But I want to do it with rubber baits. How do I make that selection?
Yep.
Okay. So how do you fish a 0 to 12 point appropriate with rubber baits? Okay.
Yeah, there's some excellent choices. Well, glad you brought that up.
But thought process wise, you can do one of two things. You could fish the shallow section with shallow rubber, right? And then the mid and the deep with a deeper running bait, or are you something like a tube where it's going to be contouring it all the way down, right?
Mm-hmm.
So fishing that until we have a pattern. Now, caveat being, we don't know the pattern. We got to find fish. That's the whole shooting match here is proper lure selection. Let the fish tell you what you need to have on. But I don't know. I'm trying to articulate as best I can to beat it home, right?
Yeah.
If someone sees every problem as a nail, guess what they use?
A hammer.
For every problem.
Mm-hmm.
Not every problem's a nail. Okay? So look at where you're at any given moment. What bait do I have at my disposal that covers the contours and structure of this closely that will pull a fish that is tight to cover and structure or entice them in? Okay? Now, the next component of what I think appropriate lure selection is, and probably people are thinking I'm going down some rabbit hole where I just start listing off lures per season, not going to happen, right? It's not how it works. Is the next component being size. Okay? Back to that early season ramblings, right? It's a pretty good solid rule of thumb, Jay, what? Smaller baits in the early part of the year.
Right? Yep, it is.
Little stuff. Well, sometimes when we get cold fronts, Jay, guess what we go back to? Little stuff, right? This happens continually. So to be effective, contouring cover and structure and finding bites or finding a pattern, we need to have at our disposal multiple size options of baits that do what we were just discussing, right? So you can't look at this mythological point from 0 to 12 and go, I threw a pounder at it and a cold front and didn't move anything. Right? You need to have a secondary plan on how to approach that. You know, am I going to throw mm-hmm. a smaller rubber presentation that has a similar running depth, or am I going to break that down with crankbaits? What do you have in your box? And something a lot of musky anglers don't have. A crankbait that's a downsized crankbait that's going to run 12 to 15 or something of that nature. on a cast, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not many of those. A lot of, I think most of the ones out there are bass baits, but having a tool at your disposal. What do I throw in a cold front in the early season where fish have come off these littoral flats and they've gone deep, but they're still hitting little stuff? What do you do? Well, conditions and structure dictate that the fish are in XYZ, but now we don't have a tool to target that zone. Right? And I've spent enough days on the boat. I'll tell you this. On days that muskies are not active, they are not willing to move far. That's why I'm saying contour, cover, and structure. You know, the same fish that you always hear people say, Jay, or people always are throwing bucktails, right? They throw them at everything and they burn them in the first column, of the first foot of the water column. And they're shocked that they don't move anything till sunset or because fish aren't moving. Well, it's not true. They're just tight to cover and structure. So the most of the day you're throwing over them and they're unwilling to move that far. The closer you get to the fish, the more willing they are to move. It's just a fact.
Yeah.
So having downsized options, you know, what baits do I have that complement things? So understanding having a grouping of lures that allow you to cover the deepest to shallowest sections of the bodies of water you generally fish in a litany of sizes. And you notice I'm not throwing a lot of like, you got to have this brand or that brand or this, you know what I'm saying, out there. That's not the premise. It's not, I don't care what you buy or what you don't buy or whatever. But having a complete toolbox, because lure selection to me is not about what a lot of people have been writing in. What colors, Jay, right? What this, what that, what this. It, little to do with that. Paint it black, paint it white, and I'm done. Don't give a shit, right? What matters to me is, do I have size, action, and profiles at a in a complete running depth, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And if you look back to somebody I've always admired, Buck Perry, I've talked about before in structure fishing. You know, when he did spoon plugs, there's like, what, 4 or 5 different size spoon plugs, and they all were different sizes, different running depths, and that was it, right? At a certain point, we just need tools that will hit the target zones we need to hit, okay? Back to circling back to, how do I know what target zones I need to hit, Jay? Guess what that is dictated by? Structure, right? Okay. Now, a little tidbit about the baits. Jay, why do you think I put variable weighting in most of the baits that I make?
So you're flexible in this very situation.
Son of a bitch. Somebody finally Bing. Got it.
Hmm.
And I'm not talking about, you know, tightening and cracking all this shit.
No, you're turning one bait into three baits.
Turning one bait into three bait with a Phillips head, so I don't have to go. Okay, yeah. Here's what's annoying, and I'm giving you guys this. It might not be this is not the sexiest episode, and you're probably going, why is he rambling? Because when I'm sober, I ramble, Jay.
Well, I feel sexy.
You know, you're lucky I've been drinking, because being sober loosens my tongue. No, sorry, I'm just too much of a nerd to do this without having a few Pepsis first. But anyway. The reason I do like the variable weighting in my baits is because guess what I don't want to do? I don't want to have to have three different baits that are like, okay, I got in like a baseline for me would be, I need a mid shell and deep of this size bait, right? Mm-hmm. In a dark pattern. Now I need a mid shell and deep of this bait in a light pattern. To be effective, now I need 6 baits to even start. Right? So let's say with the Kraken, they're on tubes. I figure out muskies are on tubes. Well, to stay on top of them, regardless of what's happening during that pattern, they're on that size class bait, but the weather might change or things of that nature. Now I need 6 presentations to just get started. I hate that. That's why I do the variable weighting. And some people like just don't get it and they don't utilize it. But utilize it. If you have these baits, utilize that aspect.
Yeah.
It's there for. You know, it's not, you don't have to do anything crazy to get it. If you have one, you have one, and good. But that's why I've always liked baits that have that versatility where, you know, Phantom, there's adjustable weight kits for Phantoms, you know, and some other baits, or we can. And props to my buddy Josh Hackensmith makes the blade planer board with me and all that, right?
Mm-hmm.
He told me one day, he said, I don't buy heavy rubber baits. So what are you talking about? He said, I buy shallow variations and I weight them as needed. Ah, you see what I'm saying? So
I do.
He might start with a heavy head. And so it just alleviates the question. So, you know, if I'm a body of water and I know they're hitting walleye color baits most of the year, you theoretically could buy a shallow bulldog and weight it throughout the course of the year from you know, open to close. And that's the thing, is I need that versatility. Why do you need that? Why do you do this? Blah, blah, blah. Just set it. I need to get from shallow, mid to deep, and I need the similar size and the similar profile. And I think what's lost on most, right, Joe?
Mm-hmm.
Is I move fish early in the morning. We've talked about this kind of stuff, right? I'm moving fish early. Well, that's the bucktail, the blade thing. And they don't move out, and they don't have something on to target that, where you might be able to move fish fast and high on an early part. But if you went to, say, a similar size profile or a thump profile of a spinner bait and drop down a few feet, and you work with them outwardly on their structure movement and work back in, you could contact more fish and be consistent. So the lure selection, coming back to the core of the matter, is your lure selection is size, action, and profile, right? Now we need to have those readily available so we stay on that, okay? That's why I said about the versatility thing. So our it would make no sense. Let's say, Jay, for example, just to drive it home, right? Every morning and every evening, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're contacting fish on shallow, regular-sized bulldogs. The 10-inch guys, right? They're coming in. Maybe you're catching one in the morning or catch one in the evening. What is the logical move if you don't see anything else the rest of the day? Right?
Mm-hmm.
Where did they go? We need to go deeper. We need to come probe, because they're coming unglued on these things early and late. But the other 12 hours of the day. You see what I'm getting at? It's like, it's not like their preference for what they were going to hit or react to positively changed because it was 12 in the afternoon. Okay. Their daily or seasonal or the micro pattern preference didn't change. They are structurally deeper than you want them to be in your presentation you currently have on. It's not running where they are. Therefore, they're not reacting. So that's why it's important to have the variations of running depth of presentation or the ability to augment them. Right?
Yep.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm not trying to. People are going to be like, this is the least fun I've ever heard this. Please shut up, Steve.
No, you're right on.
I mean, it's this fact. It's a fish, dude. It's a fish. They react to things that are close to them. Rarely do they. If they reacted to things that were 15 feet above their head every day, this would be really easy.
It would be.
You know, I've seen it. I've seen them shoot up off the bottom, you know. So the ability to augment baits, you know, think logically. It's not like, in my brain, it's, again, the reason I said the bulldog thing, right? It's not because in the morning they want bulldogs, in the afternoon they want something different. That's what they're on. Much like they'll eat bucktails and topwater in the morning, but they won't eat the rest of the day. No, once you put things on a weight and troll them down on a deep weed edge and see what they're doing about 11 o'clock in the afternoon or in the morning, right?
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm getting at? Is there's an ability to change throughout the day with cover and structure, but that's the bait selection conversation. I don't give a crap if you have on a bucktail or you got on a bulldog. The whole matter is, am I contouring cover and structure? That's it. So it's not like, what bait do I use in the summer, Jay? What bait do you use in the summer? That's a ridiculous question, right?
A huge variety.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Why is there a huge variety? Because we need to contour, cover, and structure. I can only say it, you know, so many ways. You know, you've got to transition mentally from what's the best musky bait? That's a neophyte question. That's kind of like goober level, right? What's the best musky bait? There's no best musky bait. What tool do I have in my box that addresses my current scenario? That's the difference, right? What tool do I have to fix this? Again, I said it before, if everything's a nail, all you need is a hammer. Jay, did you fall asleep?
Yeah, I mean, look at it. You know, like the old-time golf analogy, you know, what's the best club to use? Well, you sure, if you had one to use, really?
Yeah.
You know, when we think about golf, you know, there's 13, 14, 15 you're allowed to use in a bag, I think, something in that nature. Look at it, same thing as musky fishing. It's just like you've got to have all those tools to apply the different levels and the different speeds. And, of course, and then you start getting into size with seasonality.
Right, which is, again, a whole other thing. I'm just trying to beat it home here. So when you're sitting there, what do I use? Because I think what kills me is, like, the question of what's the best bait this time. Again, this whole podcast does not answer the singular question of what bait to use when and where. You have to take that in conjunction with seasonality and structure. That's how it's done. There's, like, I don't believe in hot baits. What's the hot bait? Well, the hot bait is whatever. Oh my goodness. I just
right. The hot bait yesterday at 8:15 AM for a right. 10-minute period thank was this you. Bait. Yeah, but that has passed and that time moves on.
Well, and sometimes fish are all up shallow, right? And there's little yeah. things that are happening and all this blah, blah, blah.
Extraordinarily active at that point too, so yeah. anything might have worked.
I hear
which
you.
Is rare.
But you know, seven people are like, I get what he's saying. Everybody else is like, shut up, Steve.
No.
You know, that logical selection, excuse me. Now, that can change. You know, if you're a river fisherman and it's the thing's 5 feet deep at max, well, changes what you're doing. I need baits that run at zero and I need baits that run at four because if they're at five, they're stuck, right? But you can really change things up like, intelligent lure selection might be denoted, you know, because you're fishing inland lakes, right? And it maxes out at, say, 20 feet. Well, I need baits that run from 0 to 20, and that's what I fish, and that's all I need. And so the body of water that you're targeting will sort of tell you what mid-shell and deep is. So if we have mid-shell and deep options available to us, or just what we typically call, you know, shallow, mid, whatever, look at the body of water you have. And make sure you have tools that will target from top to bottom. That's it. Now, make the selections based on what tools you're going to use as to what the job before you is. Okay? To wrap it all up is, we're not going to throw bucktails when it has high, bright sun, dead flat, compost, frontal. I've said it for 5 years, right? But we might throw a deeper running crankbait or a deeper running rubber jerk bait because bait, fish, and forage are holding close to the bottom, therefore muskies would be, right? Now we have an understanding of the structure. We know how to quickly make an intelligent selection of what crankbait is going to contour that cover or structure the best, or what rubber bait will. That's it. Thank you. Good night. So, I mean, that does that wrap it up, Jay? Am I too rambly? Should I drink more? I'm sorry. You know, trying to live better here.
It all depends on how deep you want to get into this. It seems like you were avoiding getting into, like you said, obviously getting into specifics. Like, you know, you should be using a
six-inch
slammer fatty minnow.
It's,
you know, just recommending specifics.
It's not specific. It doesn't matter. Okay. The reason I'm not is I'm giving you the roadmap. Okay. You have shallow, mid, and deep. Shallow, mid, and deeper relative, whatever body of water you fish. So you have big, medium, small lures as well. So we have three parameters, shallow, mid, deep. And I need a small lure that does shallow, mid, deep. And I need a big lure that does shallow, mid, deep. And a medium lure, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Now I need those in two colors. So theoretically, excuse me, I had too many tacos. So we need shallow, mid, deep, 3, 6, 9, you know, sub 20 lures, could you be effective? I believe so.
I see what you're saying. Yeah. Yeah.
If I am, I believe wholeheartedly, and I'm on the water way too much. I just I told Jay on the phone, I just redid the captain's license. How many days am I here? I believe that if I have a small, a medium, and a large lure, right, all the way up to big, that is, one's dark, one's light, and I cover that basis, I can contact the actively feeding fish if I understand cover structure. Right? So is it a magic presentation, or is it closing the gap between you and those fish based on conditions? Are muskies that picky? Huh? I don't think so. I think that muskies are picky regarding size of presentation far more than they are as far as proximity. So the closer you are to the fish, the more apt they are to eat it if it's in their preferred size range at any given moment.
Yep, yep.
Okay. So size range can change based on seasonality and conditions. But if I close the gap, I'm far more certain than I am than having on a hot presentation. So I fish a crap ton of spinnerbaits in the spring and the summer. I fish the meat grinder nonstop, right? I fish it because I can get down and dirty quicker and easier and more consistently than I can with double blades. And I'm talking the difference between a fish that's at 4 feet and so the spinnerbait, the meat grinder might run at 3 feet and the fish are at 4 feet and a inline bucktail might run a foot and a half dip. I'm getting more strikes because the closing of that gap, right? The closer I am, the more apt you are to hit under most conditions. Taking hot fish out of the equation, the fish is going to come up there and launch up and hit a ham sandwich, whatever, right? Closing the gap between you and the fish is always the quickest way to up your odds, in my opinion.
Yeah.
That's where I'm getting at. So is it a matter of, do I have the right bait on or do I have the right running depth on? In my opinion, it's, do I have the right running depth on? Because I've seen plenty of bait. So blades, perfect example. I've had numerous days of multi-fish days that start on double eights. And, you know, the middle of the day we catch one or two and it's on a big willow leaf blade, right? And then we catch fish on, say, double eights or double tens or topwater in the evening, right? Mm-hmm. Is the thump from a willow leaf blade different from a Colorado blade? Absolutely. Feels different. I've ran them. I mean, I'm not even going to go to. I've stood in a pool, you know what I'm saying, or have your buddy run one by your hand. You'll feel it, right? You can feel a different vibration. So are we dialed in on the vibration that muskies want, or are we dialed in on the running depth they want? I'll bet my house I'm dialed in on the running depth more so than the vibration. If we are dialing in on the vibration that muskies were into, right? Wrap your head around this, Batman. Mm-hmm. If this entire game of musky fishing was about dialing in on the vibration they wanted, right? That would circumvent conditions. If they were like, I want that, and if we could go, that's the vibration they want, bassier, lower frequency, thumpier things carry faster than high frequency vibrations in water, and water is a superb conduit of sound and vibration quickly, right?
Yeah.
We would all just have whatever the magic quote-unquote bait is, and it didn't matter how fast or where we threw it, that vibration would pull them in, they'd want it. It's an indiscriminate game when it comes to what they want. It's where they want it. And what we're trying to do is narrow that field of where we need to be using structure. Secondly, following that up with baits that appropriately run in conjunction with that cover and structure.
There you go.
Sorry. That's the way my guide brain works. I'm going plenty of days of like the difference between me running. Let's say I'm trolling, right? Headlocks, you know, I love them. And I change it up. I've been doing the same freaking pass for, say, an hour, which is not uncommon. I'm neurotic, right? I run the same trolling pass for an hour, and then I add 3 feet of line and I catch a fish. He could feel it.
Mm-hmm, 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 mm-hmm.
Don't tell me that fish just... Sorry, guys. I apologize.
No, I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying. I've been in the boat with you when... Take the example of spinner baits. I mean, yeah. The ultimate spinner that is extremely versatile. It is all you have to have is have your little blade kit in the boat,
right,
which everyone should have, by the way. If you fish spinner baits, you can't do this with inlines unless you want to make a quick bucktail on the boat, which I've seen you do too.
Yeah.
But back to spinner baits, it's like pick out the split ring pliers. It's just like this is a big willow blade on the end, or this has a... it's a big spinner bait with, let's say, a Mag 10 blade.
Mm-hmm.
Well, take it off and put a number 8 Colorado or a number 7 Indiana or something like that. And that thing's going to run 3 feet deeper. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can slow it down on top of it because I want to helicopter that thing and work at depth. This is like, you know, it's got to get down 14. You got to get that bait down there. Tickle the top of the weeds or the, you know, you're running a deep weed line.
Mm-hmm.
And that might be the only contact you have for that 4 hour dull period that everyone has been through on the water during the day.
Yeah.
You know, high sun period, you know, where it's just like, okay,
where
fish are deeper and generally not that active, you know, they've moved off and it's just like we've been talking about, or you've been talking about.
Okay. Perfect example to reiterate my point and my ramblings, right? And you can, I don't know him from Adam. He's a great dude. And we've used his stuff in videos. And obviously the Muskie Shop has a relationship with him. John Bondi.
Yeah.
One of the first Bondi bait videos, he talks about, I was guiding in the morning and guiding in the evening and things were happening, but where did they go the rest of the day?
Yep.
And I decided to just start bouncing a jig off the bottom, and I realized, well, they moved slightly to the outside breaker to the main channel, depending on conditions, and we could catch them during the day doing this. Welcome to the Bondi bait kind of deal, right?
Yeah.
If you, he's not saying it as in-depth as I am in that statement. He understands it maybe more so than I do. I'm not saying he doesn't. But what I'm saying is he's articulating exactly what's happening on the daily movements of muskies right there.
Yeah.
Well, they're snapping in the morning and they're snapping in the evening, but nothing happened in the middle of the day. And I went, I'm sick of this. I need to do something to get them to snap during the middle of the day because I'm bored shitless. What do I do? Came up with a wonderful solution. What did he come up with, Jay? A tool.
Yeah.
Right? So muskies magically transition from blades to Bondi baits in their preference of presentation?
In one day period? Absolutely.
In hours? No.
Yeah.
They don't. No. What I'm getting at is it's not that they're going to eat blades and they're going to switch to Bondi baits. It's proximity.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Exactly. It's not like. Yeah, you're with me where you go.
Mm-hmm.
It's running depth, running depth, running depth. Where, perfect example again here to beat at home, another video. Fatty Slammer Minnow came out.
Yeah.
You and I and a couple good podcasters and Jim were on the boat. And we had regular slammers and we had fatty slammers. And in tough conditions, the fatty slammer minnow was getting hit 2-1 over the regular slammer minnow. Right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That was a good day.
Was it because the fatty slammer minnow is better than the regular slammer? No. What does it do, Jay? It runs deeper. And I think a lot of times what will happen, we get so jaded by our initial experiences musky fishing. I've said this in some capacity before. We all start with bucktails. We all start with topwater because whoever took us the first time realized we were morons and we would snag a bulldog, right? So everyone catches their first muskie on some shallow running bait, you know, in general, not everybody, but vast majority, right?
Sure. Yeah.
And you get hung up on that because that's the only success you have, or it just becomes a matter of that's comfortable.
It could be the magic bait for some people, you know, and it's just like that way of thinking is kind of narrow.
And there's no magic bait. I'm sorry. Today's the day we're in magic bait therapy. We're in bait selection therapy at this point. I don't care what bait you pick. Does it run at the appropriate depth? The cover instructor says that I have to. The next addition to that is we need to look at our electronics. Oh, right. So if we have an understanding of the cover and structure we're throwing at, we want baits that contour that, right, obviously. But that can also be augmented by the depth that a bait fish are holding at during any period of the day. You know, because the goal is not to, and there's days I don't catch fish, not many, but it happens. But the goal is to be as effective as possible, right? I don't want to catch a fish. I want to catch multiple fish. I want to be on top of these things as much as I can, because I basically, if you want to demystify this even more, if you want to hear me ramble some more, I don't believe that we're effective at muskie fishing at all. I don't believe anyone's come up with the greatest bait yet, because for the amount of fish you have to contact in any given day to get to eat, whether you know they were there or not, it's not completely effective. You see what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
So, you know, there's a modicum of truth in the matter that we need to contact multiple fish to get to eat. So the statistics of muskie fishing are the more fish I contact, let me back that up. The way I think of it is this. It's a game of statistics, which is this. The closer I am to the fish, the more of them react. The more of them that I get to react, the higher percentage of fish they'll get to eat. Right? That's it. So closing the gap structurally. We also, like I said, we can close the gap where muskie should be staged in around active bait fish. Bait fish are a really good bellwether for where your level of light penetration is, so that's something to consider. So when it comes to, say, trolling, our lure selection will be primarily, in my mind, where are the bait fish, right?
Mm-hmm.
Muskies are generally, now I say this in the 94% of the time, in my mind, muskies are staged beneath bait fish, right? They're going to feed up. I have seen later in the day, and this is just is what it is, muskies that will stage above where bait fish are going to show up. That's not very often, but it's something to consider. I can't sort of leave that out, right?
Okay.
So you can sort of short line troll above where bait fish are, because muskies are tagging off the fish that come above them. But for the vast majority of the year, they're going to be below. So our lure selection and trolling, Jay, what does that become? Running depth and size. I mean, my go-to is, I'll tell you flat out, if you look at my rod locker, or excuse me, my bait locker on the boat, right?
Yeah.
Tough shads. I've got headlocks, matlocks, obviously, right? I've got grandmas. And then I've got big fork stuff. And it's not a matter of, like, interchangeability or mixing up this. Of like, I usually go four deep every time I'm trolling. You know, if I when I'm on bodies of water that I know, like the back of my hand, I don't go, I need to put up four different baits to find the fish. I go, okay, seasonality says this. Structure says this. I need four baits that sort of run with a foot or two range, right?
Yeah.
So what I'm getting at is I will have my big baits, my headlocks, right? I'll have my tough shads, little guys, like whether they're 4.5, 5s or whatever they are. You know, those are my small baits, and I'll have those in dark and light. You know, I have my grandma's dark and light color. So you have, like, shallow, mid, and deep. It's the same thing. So we need multiple presentations that run deep that are shallow, you know, that are, excuse me, we need multiple presentations that run deep that are small, medium, and large. We need mid, small, medium, large, shallow, small, medium, large for drawing. Same as casting. So to me, it's less of a matter of the quote unquote right bait or the magic bait. It's closing the proximity gap. So what do you think, Jay? I've rambled forever. I am so sorry.
What do I think? Yeah, I mean, I like it, you know, and the thing with trolling too is the one exception to the rule is, and you know, you've talked about this before too, with trolling is there's something about bigger bait that stand out and are sometimes successful even when, you know, small bait preference might be the key, you know, like on a post-frontal thing or say earlier in the season when water temperatures haven't really gotten close to peak yet and weed growth isn't full, where these big 10 inch baits can still sometimes take the fish. So, but for the most part, especially earlier in the season, having the small, medium, large when trolling to find your proximity, your size first, and then your proximity with trolling depths. And of course that is really difficult to wrap your head around. You know, and that other trick that, you know, that we've done on the boat too is have a lure that I think you use like 30 foot for an example. Correct me if I'm wrong. You know, take a magic marker on the back of a grandma and write, you know, 21 on it or whatever. Yeah. When you're really dialed in with the bait and it's just like you've got a plethora of lures, let's say you've got 20, 30, you know, primo trolling lures, like, you know, like the back of your hand. You know, you've researched them and, you know, done your homework with them. You know how fast they run, or, you know, what speeds that are just in the power band for them. Because certainly, you know, supernatural baits can be really gone pretty quick. You know, I think Duff likes those things 3.7 and higher. He says that's where they shine. Well, a lot of trolling baits. I don't know where I'm going with this, Steve, but I'm just Cisco kids. That's one of my favorites. That thing is great if you need to slow down.
The thing that is here's the deal. Where I'm trying to explain something and fumble and bumble and for whatever it is, or Jay is too. Something that becomes moderately second nature and you forget how you got there. Right? That's why it's moderately hard to articulate, because experience has led me here. I'm trying to line you up to skip as much rough experience as you possibly can. I've burnt countless thousands of gallons of gasoline trolling the wrong shit. I know it. And then when you learn, you go, oh crap, I'm self-aware enough that when I finally hit it right, I go, okay, this is working. This is working on my body of water, right? In these conditions. This comes back to, like, you're just talking about, like, the right running depths on your baits. I talk about that actually in the book, Jay. Noting them. And I don't cast them and I don't waste them, because that is a specified tool, right? I've got a couple grandmas. I don't care what color they are. I got a couple grandmas. Like, this is the one. If I need to hit this number, this running depth, and kind of this speed range, this is this one.
Yeah, right? All I got to do is throw it out at 30 feet of line, and I know what it's going to do.
Right. It's going to run X amount of feet, and this is kind of like the ballpark. So, again, if every problem's a nail, every solution's a hammer, but that's not the case. And so denoting these patrolling presentations as much as you're casting. And when it comes to your casting presentations, my goodness, if I find a depth rater that I'm constantly contacting fish on 8-foot breaks on casting, guess what I'm going to do with that thing? I'm not going to risk it anywhere else. Right. And it's not that you have to have a million baits. It's a matter of making an assessment on what baits are successful or what baits are productive and where they're productive at, so we know what tools are appropriate for the job. Because when I'm making this thing about this, you know, if every problem's a nail, every solution's a hammer thing, most people approach musky fishing as if they're not hitting bucktails, we're in trouble.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, I think they do.
So,
right.
You know, and I'm not saying like pot people that listen to the podcast. I'm saying just your general thing. That's the general consistency. Well, they're hot on blades, right? And the way we break down problems with fishing blades, now we change the configuration. We change the vibration. Well, I said earlier, I don't think vibration matters. Well, you know, what are people throwing more now? Are they throwing more stagger blades than they were regular blades 2 years ago? I think so.
Yeah, they are.
That's a hot thing now. So what gets the most time? It's proximity, proximity, and proximity, in my opinion. So if you adhere to my line of thinking, which is the closer I am to the fish, the more fish I will contact, therefore the higher my percentile of hookups is, understanding running depth and how it relates to what cover and structure we're using is imperative. That's it. So, you know, a lot of the stuff, when you look at an old article I re-put up on 360, we're talking about fall stuff, you know, and cold fronts of literally trolling rattle traps on dipsy divers. What? That's ridiculous. Why would you do that? Well, I need a small presentation that I can get as deep as possible. Well, a dipsy diver controls depth, and now I have a tiny presentation down there. It's something I used to do all the time, right? Which is like a poor man's downrigger or a simple downrigger. So it wasn't about, it was closing the gap. I mean, the whole game is closing the proximity gap. You know, it, again, I've sort of said it before. If muskies reacted simply to vibration, we would all stand in the middle of the lake and throw bucktails out and burn them all fall, winter, spring, everywhere, right? And muskies, therefore, being attracted to the vibration of the bucktail, which carries far faster than we can comprehend, would come off the bottom and smoke them. That is not the case. Right? Like you said, profile, yeah, in open water, does a 10-inch headlock really pull in some fish? Absolutely. Right? Is it a matter of running depth and vibration? Yes. But running depth is so important to allow that vibrational profile to hit the fish faster, right? And I have gotten it. Okay, I'm going to go down the rabbit hole real quick.
Okay.
Follow me here.
I am.
We are in a dead flat, calm, inland lake, right?
Oh, boy.
And we take double tens and we throw them. We throw them at the edge, and our boat's in 25, and there's a muskie at 12 feet down, and we don't know. He's suspended at 12, but we throw double tens, and we just burn them back to the boat, right? And we go right over top of that fish. Does he know? Is he aware of that vibration? Absolutely. There's no doubt. These fish are so aware. Herbeck says all the time, and he'll tell you, these fish are smart and they know they're there. They know their environment, right? They know nothing else. So inland lake, bowl shape, no wind, nothing. You're in 20. You throw the edge. There's a muskie suspended in front of you at 12 feet down. And you burn double tens. Is he aware that bait went over him? Abso-freaking-lutely, right?
Yeah, you're talking about a very noisy presentation.
With a big bassy
thump. 6 or 7 feet away from him.
Yeah.
Above him in this case, but only 6 or 7 feet.
But you're burning. Oh, yeah. No, I'm saying you're burning it. So he's 12 feet down. I'm not saying you're slow rolling. So you burn them, right? So
well, they're even if it was 10 feet away, what I'm saying is, you know, I mean, of course, it's only 10 feet. You know, it's less than, you know, it's like half a boat length.
Right. Why does he well, great point. I wasn't going there, but you just went there because I love what you said. It's half a boat length. I've said to people often, they'll go 20 feet is a big distance. They won't say 20 feet.
20 feet seems incredibly deep.
My boat's 21.
Exactly.
I can freaking, we can hear each other. Hey, buddy. I don't have to scream.
Yeah.
Hey, Jay. You know, I'm not.
Oh, I can hear you.
Yeah. I'm not screaming.
And get the net, Dave.
Most of, you know, sorry, a lot of people, you're sitting in a room. I'm sitting in this hotel room right now. From me to the freaking corner of this room is longer than my boat. Can I see the corner of that? Yeah. if there was a fan there, you know, think of a bucktail as a fan, right?
Yeah.
If someone turned a fan on 20 feet from me, could I freaking
Would I be aware
of it? I think so.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So why are they not coming unglued? It's not close enough. Is it a visual thing? Possibly. Is it a conditional thing? Now, is that fish that we theoretically said suspended at 12 and you're out in 20 and you throw over top of him? If it is, you know, dark, cloudy skies and he can sort of put together the picture and you go, okay, there he is. Bam, right? If that's a hot fish, meaning an actively feeding fish, and that goes over him, I think he'll make a move. If it's a negative or neutral fish, which most of the time they are, probably not. Now, if you slow rolled it right over his head, would he make a move? I think so. So, obviously, the worse conditions, the tighter we need to be there. Generally, guess how great conditions are? Kind of crappy.
Generally.
Right? Yeah. For the amount of days I'm on the water, most days are crap, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe the morning's good, maybe the evening's good, right? You know, so closing that gap. I'm gonna shut up. I hope it makes sense. Like, I thought seven people might appreciate 2.5. Jay,
I think well, take a new angler, for example. If they digested this information and went, okay, I want to get into this further, and right now I've got my maps and I got a musky frenzy lure and I've got a collection of bucktails is what I'm getting at, you know, because that's what Uncle Joe said I should use.
Right.
Great. You'll probably catch some fish with those. You'll probably do really well, but to be a great angler, you know, especially during the day and times when they're not that aggressive, you're going to take what Steve is talking about here and hopefully that'll save them some money. You know, if they really want to invest and really get into it and, you know, just love the sport, which so many people do now, this is all going to be very helpful because they can go, okay, I'm going to narrow this down to the small, the medium, the large size. And then within that, you know, the two great color patterns for your specific body, generally light and dark.
Yeah.
Cause you can match anything with that. And then, you know,
you're off to the races.
Depth.
Yeah.
You're off to the races and you just invested in 20 lures rather than, I've seen a lot of people do instead of 80 or 90 because, you know, guessing. There's a lot of cool baits that just came out. You're guessing and you're being repetitive with some of the tools.
Right.
Which is great. It's a fantastic sport just for the whole collection thing. Aside from that, if you want to be productive but yet economical.
I mean,
this is a great guide.
I don't want to. Here's the thing. I don't care about collections, but I care about, I think anybody at this day and age cares about economical, right? But more so at this point, everybody just wants to catch a fish. So it's like you're grabbing anything and everything and going, I just want something that works, right? And like, you know, again, it's not about something that works every day, all day. It's about a tool that works in the situation, the scenarios you're dealing with, which becomes the important factor.
Yep.
You know, and it'll save you a lot of heartache where you go, make your lure selection about running depth, running depth, running depth, and then small, medium, and large. Right. So for me, like, I'll tell you flat out, my shallow running crankbait group, right?
Mm-hmm.
Slammer, shallow invader, and then the freaking big Joe Booger, right? Those are like, if you go there, what three are you grabbing? That's it. Do I believe that a slammer crankbait for that small size, right? Smaller profile. It's not overall length, but it's a smaller profile than the shallow invader, right? That bait is going to be as productive, if not more productive, or equally productive than a small shallow raider or a crane or the big fork or a whatever, the smoker shad or whatever. Yes, because I am covering the appropriate depth in relation to cover and structure, right? Which is far more important than the quote-unquote magic presentation. Because it doesn't exist. There's no magic bait. right? Now, at times, you know, you've seen stuff, and I'll give you the caveat. Oh, well, the double tens came out. They're crazy. Yeah, because everybody threw them all summer long when fish were shallow. It wasn't like muskies magically moved from sun up to sundown, right, when double tens came out. Right? It wasn't like they miraculously manifested, but people were throwing during the peak times a bait they had never seen. So, yes, does that matter? Yes, vibration matters in some capacity. And we're not crawling down the rabbit hole of pressure water, things of that nature. But intelligent lure selection is that small, mid, large, shallow, mid, deep. Across mm-hmm. the board. That's it. I'm going to shut up, Jay. I've got to get up and guide in the morning. I've been rambling forever. Folks, I hope I didn't ramble too much. I hope you enjoyed the death metal. What do you think, Jay?
I love that intro. Are you kidding me? That was fun.
All right, folks. Later.
How can anyone night. Forget the classic musky death metal songs?
No one can, Steve.
It's amazing. Slime Life Records is proud to present the classic death metal songs of musky fishing. Jay, do you remember the hit from Elmer Jensen and the Fetus Grinders?
I do.
Here's the classic Minocqua Musky Beheading. Wow, Jay, that's such a great song.
It is. Steve, you know, Elmer actually auditioned for Dark Chaos Frenzy Mayhem, but said no way after finding out that they all like the bass fish.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that's when he joined the supergroup The Sucker Penetrators and recorded the smash hit Death by Bumpboard.
Jay, I think everyone has hard rock wrong, especially deathcore. They think it's all about ooh and not about love. But Freddie Black Metal Blades Palermo proves him wrong with his love song, Pikegasm. It's about one man's love for a few small farm animals and a couple Northwoods girls that are solid twos. They would be ones in a major city.
Gotcha. Hey, Steve, you remember when I was a roadie with Musky Kill Rigs?
Oh, my God, I almost forgot. Who could forget the timeless classic, Smoke 2 and Set the Hook? These songs are amazing, but how could we forget here at Slime Life Records, one of the most influential death metal bands from Stevens Point, Wisconsin, Prop Wash Musky Incinerator?
If no one can forget their smash hit single, Safe Musky Release Into the Boiling Grease.
Slime Life promo can never include all the hits of deathcore musky fishing.
I know!
But this compilation includes hits from such artists as Clinch Knot,
Soft Plastic Cadaver,
Backlash Boilermaker,
Hellhound Apocalypse,
Braid Rash,
Musky Corpse,
Jake Smitty Smith and the Minocqua's Boy Choir,
Black Magic Maps,
and Joe Booker and the Bottom Raiders.
Don't forget about fluorocarbon tourniquets.
People need to stop banging their head and start banging the numbers on your phone, cause Elmer's standing by. This is your one chance to get the greatest deathcore songs of musky fishing.
Lighten up your life and live a little, Steve.
Elmer's standing by.
Watch your mind.